War Room, Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's the 29th of November, the year of our Lord, 2019. It's Black Friday. We're here at the Breitbart Embassy for episode 51. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcasting Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and also Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable news operation in the country with 70 million homes passed under the leadership of Chris Ruddy. We're also on the homepage with Jim Hoff's Gateway Pundit, also Michael Patrick Leahy's all the newspapers he has and the websites, Tennessee Star, Minnesota Star, the one up in Michigan. Just fantastic. Joined here today by Raheem Kassam, the architect, along with Nigel Farage of the Brexit. Dominic Cummings and Raheem Kassam were the two strategists.
So he claims.
And Jack Maxey, who ran the War Room for us in 18 in the midterm elections. We had one here when we stood up Trump at War and really focused on 30 districts that the Democrats won 40 of, and we told people early on there was going to be a fight. Bloomberg put in $100 million. Spire put in money. Soros put in money. And that is why the President of the United States is now being impeached. And we are on this show 7 days a week until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States. We ended the Thanksgiving show. One of the things we gave thanks for is President Trump's really newfound focus on this effort, because it seemed like he was avoiding it or not paying attention to it. For the first 5 or 6 weeks of Nancy Pelosi tried to run the tables on him. And when he focused, he came up with a very central concept. I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, it's a perfect call. And the reason it's a perfect call is that this is what the people of the United States elected me to do in November of 2016. It's to confront the permanent political class, to look at this foreign policy that's gotten us spend $7 trillion in the Middle East with all these casualties, all these deaths. And what have we accomplished? And so President Trump was supposed to take a hard look at it and come through things very differently. Black Friday is the biggest shopping day in the biggest economy in the world. And we know from the University of Michigan consumer sentiment report, which is really the gold standard or the platinum standard. Now I think it's for over 30 months in a row, it's been over 95%. This harkens back to times like in the 1990s with Bill Clinton, when they had the internet stock markets on fire, and even the 1980s under Ronald Reagan. And the reason for that is the deconstruction of the administrative state, that is deregulation, tax cuts, people putting capital, this economy's on fire. One of the hiccups we had is the dollar is so strong, almost now overvalued, as everybody in the world wants to get into the American economy. The stock market's on an all-time tear. This thing is essentially... his economy is essentially on fire. But what President Trump said is that, no, I didn't do something wrong that just doesn't reach an impeachable offense. I not only did I do anything wrong, this is what I was hired to do, with Jack Maxey and Raheem. Raheem, was that a seminal moment when Matt Gaetz broke the fever and went down there, but when really Trump stood his ground and say, I didn't do anything wrong here, this is what I was hired to do?
Yeah, times were pretty tough at the beginning of this process for the Republicans, and especially for President Trump. There was, and I remember speaking to a lot of people here on Capitol Hill, and there was a great level of denial that this would even take place, that you would even have public testimonies, that a vote might be called at some point.
That you would never actually begin an official inquiry.
That there may be a Senate trial, that there may be a push to remove the president from office, and all of those things have come to pass in some way, shape, or form under Nancy Pelosi's stewardship of this whole process. And you know, it was very secretive what was coming out, very selective leaks, very selective news reporting that was coming out. And that's why we do what we do, by the way.
They were weaponizing this, correct?
They're weaponizing it very effectively. And that's why we do what we do at warroom.org, to give people the granularity of exactly what's going on and allow them to make informed decisions. But as you say, Gaetz broke the fever down there.
But let's go. I want to go to warroom.org just for a second. This is a website 24/7. You got writers, you have people pulling from the War Room. Which we have rapid response, we have polling, we have all that. And it's one site. The podcast and the broadcast is every day. We're now on, what, episode 51. You can go back and see them all. But you have a 24-hour-a-day website, and it's there to curate. And not just pro-Trump pieces,
yep.
but to give you a full raft of everything that's out there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. To give you what you need to make an informed decision as a citizen over this whole process. And we've seen people now really focusing in, whether it's in Minnesota, where they're attending town halls and saying that they're never going to vote for their Democrat congresswoman that they voted for last time, whether it's in Pennsylvania and they're protesting outside Conor Lamb's office. You know, we're seeing that all across the United States. We run that site in order not just to put the podcast out, and you can see it all there, warroom.org/podcast, and pick your poison, between the iTunes and the Google Plays and all of that, but also to allow you to understand, look, there's a lot that comes in from CNN and MSNBC and NBC and Washington Post and New York Times and Breitbart, and everywhere is pulling different angles on this stuff. What we do is we show you it all. We show you all how it plays out. We show you all how it links to each other, whether it's Comedy Central or whether it's the Washington Post, there are things that play into all of this. And I think we saw that, to come back to Gates, we saw that the day the fever broke, when Matt Gaetz marched his colleagues down to the skiff on Capitol Hill and said, these are secretive processes that the American public isn't getting to hear, and it concerns the votes of the American public that were expressed in 2016. That's where the Republican Party started to focus. That's when people started to get interested in the granularity. That's when people started to realize, and we started that show, I think the week before that, or that very
that Monday.
Monday,
it happened on Thursday.
People started to appreciate that what we're seeing here taking place in real time is a foreign policy dispute.
This is why I want to go back, and I want to do something. We had Nigel Farage sit in the seat. Yeah. Take people back to the origin story of this impeachment, and part of it took place in Ukraine in 2013. You were there reporting for Breitbart at the time. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I hopped on a plane, I think it was about December the 18th, 2013, and went from London to Kiev to see what was taking place. There were mass protests, the types of which we've seen in Hong Kong over the past year, but mass protests in the street that were effectively funded and organized by the European Union and the European Union's allies. This was a populist play by the European Union to try and pull Ukraine out of Russia's orbit, to try and stop Ukraine...
Sphere of influence,
stop Ukraine being a buffer state between European Union member states and Russia, and start it being inside. And that came across with the Articles of Association that the EU had with Ukraine. They deposed a president and a democratically elected president.
What do you mean deposed?
Well, they put the shoulder to the wheel of getting rid of him, through mass protests, all the things you do if you want to stage a coup. They did it, they funded it, they were on the back of it. You had John McCain flying over there, shaking hands and standing on the stage with leading members of parties like Svoboda in Ukraine, which is a neo-Nazi party. But everybody, rejection of having to cover that from the Washington and the London presses, the idea that you would have a U.S. senator, let alone somebody who ran for president, shaking hands with a neo-Nazi on stage. But it was okay as far as they were concerned, because my enemy's enemy is my friend. They've perceived Russia as the big threat, the big evil, and doing this was their thing.
Almost more so than the Soviet Union, because Russia's now nationalist. Yes. He embraces the Orthodox Church.
Yes.
He's culturally very conservative, so he is the great Satan.
Yeah, that's right. And also, he is a far better chess player than a lot of the Soviet leaders were.
Although he's a kleptocrat and a bad guy. But
sure.
Last time I looked in World War II, we dealt with kleptocrats and bad guys before, in Stalin and those guys, who I think took 25 million casualties in World War II.
Well, if you want to take...
11 million in Ukraine.
If you want to get really serious about kleptocrats and bad guys, then I'm afraid the entire Washington and London establishments need to refocus their aim on Beijing, not on Moscow. But this was the rejection of managed decline that you saw take place in the United States in 2016. It was the ones that were getting us into these foreign entanglements, like you see in Ukraine. The phony red lines in Syria, the implications of doing that dirty and dodgy Iran deal, even to the Paris Climate Agreement and all that stuff. Remember TTIP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, all of this. The 2016 election was a fundamental rejection of that, and a fundamental positive affirmation of what Trump ran on, which was America first.
Because this is what we're going to get into the rest of the show, is that talk about that affirmative, the affirmation of Trump's policy.
Yes, from the 2016 election cycle.
Yes, from 2016.
Cycle.
Yes.
Look, you had the outsider of all outsiders come along, and he didn't say, "Look, I'll tinker around the edges." He said, "I'm going to tear this place down." He said, "We're going to go in there and knock the heck out of ISIS." He said, "We're going to get out of these Middle East wars as soon as that's done." He said, "We're going to fundamentally reorientate our relationship in Europe and Eurasia." He said, "We're going to drain the swamp, the Washington foreign policy establishment, domestic policy establishment swamps, the coupled with their lobbyists here on Capitol Hill and downtown in D.C., have presided over circumstances that have left the ordinary American with less than $400 in their pockets in an emergency." That's what Trump was elected to do. That's what he's done. That's why this Black Friday is going to be so massive, Steve, because people finally have cash back in their pockets.
Okay, on Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, War Room Impeachment, Stephen K. Bannon, Jack Maxey, Raheem Kassam. We're going to take a short commercial break to pay some bills and let people know where they can go shop. We're going to return on the John Frederick Salem, America's Voice, and Newsmax in just a moment.
Miller, Kassam, War Room Impeachment
on the John Frederick's Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 51. It's Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year and the biggest economy in mankind's history. It's 29 November, the year of our Lord, 2019. War Room Impeachment, Jack Maxey, Raheem Kassam with Steve Bannon on the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, America's Voice.news, and Newsmax TV. I want to go to this economy's on fire. When President Trump took over, it was in the doldrums. He's put the country to work. That's one of the reasons people are too busy to really focus on the impeachment, and that's why we're doing the site, to curate all the information, do a podcast for 1 hour a day. You can come here 1 hour a day, go to the website, get everything you need to know. Maxey, how important is this economy being on fire for the reason that it looks like the tide may be turning against the Democrats in their focus on removing Trump from office somewhere other than the ballot box?
Well, one of the things we have to remember is since Donald Trump was elected, inflation adjusted, we've average middle income families got $5,000 more in their pockets, which is huge.
That's
highest
a huge
level
deal
in history. And as James Carville and Clinton parroted so elegantly, it's the economy stupid. And the average American is psyched to just be earning more, and their lives are getting better. They're seeing things improve, and they're just pretty much...
They're too busy, really, to follow the impeachment, and particularly on broadcast TV, where ratings kind of drop through the floor. And the reason is that he's put the country at work. We have the lowest unemployment essentially in history. We have lowest Black unemployment in recorded history. We have the lowest Hispanic employment, I think, in 40 or 50 years. And finally, wages are starting to rise, particularly at the lower skill levels, which is very important. Raheem, how important is this?
You know, you look at the Emerson poll that came out earlier in the week, and the approval of President Trump rising to 34.5% amongst Black registered voters is highly noteworthy, and the economy is a massive, massive part of that. Yes, there's other things, there's prison reform, things like that. But I mean, when you consider that only 8% of Black people in America voted for President Trump in 2016.
Is that a real walk people? It's 34% approval among African Americans, and it's 36%, I think, percent approval among Hispanics.
That's right. That's exactly right. And these are numbers that Democrats simply were not ready for. They don't understand it. They don't recognize it. Now, look.
This is the key to economic nationalism. It doesn't matter your race, doesn't matter your ethnicity, doesn't matter your gender, doesn't matter your sexual preference. It matters that you're a citizen of the United States. He's going to make the economy better for American citizens.
But what's also important that Democrats fail to recognize, and that's why they're bleeding out so much amongst minority communities, is that it's not just about what you can do for your country. It's also about your country recognizing you as an active citizen, recognize, you know, and giving you the impetus, not giving you handouts, but giving you the undergirding of what it is to be a citizen, and allowing you to take your validity, your sovereignty, your agency as a human being out there, right? And for a lot, very long time, you're hearing it more and more. And fine, you know, I know I deal a lot in anecdotal evidence, but the ear to the ground is almost as important as the statistics and the polls on a piece of paper, right? You hear it out there so much. that the black people in America fundamentally understand that this president is not concerning himself with keeping people on welfare, keeping people in a box, you know, keeping people down. He's like, hey, let the animal spirits rage, right? Allow these people to do for themselves.
That's the key of free market capitalism. This is what deconstruction of the administrative states about, is to stop not just regulation, but the overall regulatory apparatus. Unlock the animal spirits of capitalism and let it go to work.
And I think the last leg on that stool of what's being created here is there was a massive push, a major push from the Democrats in 2018 to sort of flood the zone with ethnic minorities. You know, you have the Squad, for instance, right? But the Squad has proved itself to be sort of only out for itself or only out for its ideology.
Why do you say that?
Well, okay, well, let's take into account the fact that three of the four of the Squad, which is, you know, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Ayanna Pressley, have three quarters of them have been looked into for campaign finance violations. And they're only, what, like a year into their term here. People are starting to understand that when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez opposes jobs coming to her district, you know, that's ordinary people who could have had those jobs, who could have lived better lives, who could, you know, they've been told, learn to code, get with the newfangled economy. And then all these newfangled jobs come into town and AOC goes, hold on a minute, you know, we don't want those here. And I understand the rationale behind it, Steve. I understand what she's doing. But from ordinary people, that just doesn't stack up. And you, when you couple that with ram it down the throat multiculturalism, people are like, I don't want to be thought of as black just because I'm black. I want to be thought of as American, no matter what creed or color I am.
And that's where I think President Trump has put this economy fully back to work. I mean, one of the keys for Trump is, I want to unlock capitalism. I want to unlock the power of capitalism and turn people into capitalists. And part of that is taking away this regulatory apparatus. We definitely need regulation. Don't get me wrong. We're not anarchists and we're certainly not libertarians, although we embrace our libertarian brothers. We just try to show them the error of their ways sometimes.
But it's the
unlock the animal spirits, kind of in creative destruction of capitalism. I want to go back to the Squad, though. We got a couple minutes left in this segment and talk about, there's been some very disturbing information that's come out about Omar, Congressman Omar, by Al Arabiya, which is the fantastic Middle East. I think it's out of Saudi Arabia and in Dubai. It's kind of the AP of the Middle East. They report on a federal court trial some testimony about Omar being an asset of the Qatari government.
Yeah, this came out on Monday. And of course, nobody doing what they should be doing at the CNNs of the New York Times of the world and fully chasing it up yet. But Ilhan Omar was alleged to, or accused of having been recruited by Qatar, a foreign government.
This under sworn testimony.
Under sworn testimony, sworn deposition by a Canadian businessman in a Florida court. I'll read it to you just very quickly. An explosive testimony made by video link from Toronto to a Florida district court in late October. Kuwaiti-born Alan Bender claims to have deep ties with governments and royal officials across the Middle East, including Qatar. In his statement, he says he met Qatar's Secretary to the Emir for Security Affairs, Mohammed bin Ahmed bin Abdullah Al-Masnad, and two other senior Qatari officials. The three allegedly claimed credit for the meteoric rise of Omar, saying if it wasn't for our cash, Ilhan Omar would be just another black Somali refugee in America collecting welfare and serving tables on weekends.
This is what the Qatari said.
That's what the Qatari... This is not my words.
No. I'm just saying this is what the guy testified of what Qataris told him, as she was essentially an asset of the Qatari government.
That is the status of the deposition in the case as we understand it
brutal.
So far. Well, and not just that, but she's alleged to have passed in sensitive information that was then further relayed to Iran, which is obviously a major security concern for the United States.
So where is this going to sit? This is one guy's testimony in a federal court. What happens next?
Well, I was going to ask you the very same thing.
Well, I think what happens, this is they're going to play this out, but it seems like more testimony could come out. I mean, they wouldn't just tease it like this.
Well, look,
pretty
I mean,
explosive.
Thankfully, there is still like a responsible media out here in the United States, albeit how small they are. And I do expect that there will be some real fire-breathing journalists chasing this thing down, whether it's going to be at the New York Times or not. There will be some people digging further into this. Okay. And I reckon Ilhan Omar's got to be, well, we say squeaky bum time, very, very nervous in her chair.
Okay, we're gonna take a break on War Room Impeachment. We'll return back momentarily. We're going to talk about cults and lies. The mainstream media is coming after the Trump movement with cults and lies. Next on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. Today, Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year and the biggest economy in world history. It's actually Bannon, Kassam, and Maxey. Jack Maxey sitting in for Jason Miller, who's on holiday. 29th of November, it's episode 51 when you go to our podcast. Listening to the, can I have the producer cough anymore? On the John Fredericks Radio Network, the America's Voice .news. On the Salem Radio Broadcast Network and on Newsmax TV, we're here and back in Worm's Impeachment. Want to go to now cults and lies. Cults and lies, the two angles of attack that they are taking now is that, one, the Trump movement and all the Trump supporters are a cult of personality around President Trump. And everything that Trump says, everything this movement believes, all of it, and now has infected the Republican Party, it's all a set of lies. And I point out that CNN does their special for the Thanksgiving week. It's Jack Tapper, All the President's Lies, which is a rift on All the President's Men, which was used as a summary of the book and then the movie with Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford that talked about Woodward and Bernstein and taking down President Nixon in Watergate, All the President's Men, All the President's Lies. They hope to be the thing that takes down President Trump, and also the Guardians that we deconstructed on Thursday on the Thanksgiving show, the six lies of the Republican Party. So, Raheem, I want to start with you. I want to take lies first. Why is this the new angle attack? It's because when Trump got focused and said, hey, I didn't do anything wrong here. I don't want anybody saying it was wrong but not impeachable. It wasn't wrong. In fact, it was the thing I was elected to do, and I'm going to stick to that, and we're not going to back up an inch on that. All of a sudden, showing the polls moving, the mainstream media, the opposition party media, and the Democratic Party, it's all lies.
Well, this is Washington, D.C. One side says something that's not quite true, and the other side says something that's not quite true. And the media gets to sort of play arbiter over who gets paid attention to. Now, it was very clear from the polling, it was very clear from the anecdotal evidence that we're seeing out there in the country, and that we're seeing on you know, Comedy Central and specials and all of that, that the one things that the Republicans saying that might not be 100% true are cutting through more than the things that the Democrats are saying that aren't 100% true. So, and that's just politics. But now the media has decided we've got to put our fingers on the scales here because the Democrat messaging isn't cutting through. They don't like, the public didn't like the secretive process. The public doesn't like what Nancy Pelosi's doing. The public doesn't like the lack of focus. And
doesn't like they're spending all their time on this constitutional crisis.
I mean, look at Monday as an example of this week. You know, the firestorm against Devin Nunes, because why? Look, they may have had a sniff over something that he may have not, wanted to necessarily do if his wits were about him a little bit more. But that's again politics, right? That's just the normal everyday cut and thrust. People make mistakes or people make bad decisions. It's like any sport, right? But they drill down into this and they hammer it into your head day in and day out. And why? Because Devin Nunes just presided over a process that went terribly for the Democrats in the public impeachment.
And they're trying to make sure that they dump all over the minority report. The minority report, remember, House Intel is doing two reports. Schiff's doing a majority report. Nunes is doing a minority report. They want to demonize Nunes to take away from the weight of the minority report.
Yeah, that's precisely it. So it's that I don't think is going to land again, and I'll get a little bit intellectual in my next point, if you don't mind, which is the distinction between the ironic mind and the literal mind. Right, we've seen this in Western civilization, the death of comedy. Right, and the reason that comedy is in decline is because people are far more, the popular culture is infected with literalists now. So when the president goes up there and he says, you know, I have the best words. You know, Jake Tapper's face melts. I go, he has the best words. He doesn't have the best words. Hello, he's being facetious. He's playing a little bit. It's rhetoric. You know, and that, I'm afraid, is where the media keeps falling down. It's they take everything this president says absolutely literally. Meanwhile, the rest of the country's laughing along with President Trump, knowing that he's firmly got his tongue in his cheek when he says these things.
How tough is this thing on cults? This whole thing on cults is it started, I think, with Dan Rather and some of the guys on the left. They had this psychiatrist on that came up on CNN, I think. How deep is this? How deep, Jack, does this cult thing cut?
Well, listen, it's just part and parcel of the slander that they've been using ever since the election. Dan Rather came out the other day, and you know, the great Dan Rather, the disgraced Dan Rather, came out.
Well, he's disgraced, but the reason I bring him out because he's tied to the Watergate situation. His recent disgrace, he's tied historically to Watergate. He was the one that challenged Richard Nixon from the gallery of the press corps, right?
Yeah, that's true. But when we talk about what they're talking about, the cults today, the calling MAGA a cult, the supporters of the president a cult, number one, that's offensive to 60-some million Americans who voted for him.
Here's what we're going to do. I want to get in this cult thing. We went over this time. I want to get into the next section because it's very important we go into the cults. This is the War Room Impeachment. It's episode 51. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, America's Voice.News, and Newsmax TV. We're going to return after a short commercial break. Jack Maxey, Raheem Ghassan will walk us through the cult of personality.
Bannon, Miller, Ghassan. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, our Black Friday special. It's episode 51, 29 November, year of our Lord, 2019. John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, America's Voice.News, and Newsmax TV, the great team down there with Chris Ruddy. Very honored to be on the broadcast, live broadcasting with them.
We actually have a Black Friday special on this show. It's usually free. It's even more free today.
It's free, more free. You can talk about how you get the podcast.
www.warroom.
Isn't something simple in the www? When somebody tells me www, I tune out. It's
okay.
Too much.
HTTP.
Can you just Google it? Can you just Google warroom.org and it'll come up and then just click on it?
You could do that, but I don't
know. Do the lazy person's way.
Okay, let's drop the www. You can just go warroom.org/podcast. But a lot of people still like the www. Have you ever seen Jack typing? He does the www one finger at a time.
Speaking of Jack, I want to go back to the cult of personality, Jack, and pick up where we left off.
Hey, listen, I want to talk about cults, but I also want to talk about lies. Let's remember one thing. The media says he lies, but the American people know in their hearts, the hardworking American people of the Midland of this country know that he has kept his promises. They see it in their pocketbooks. They see it in their jobs. They see it in the factories opening up again. And they see what he's trying to do to protect this country on the border.
So you say the president's not a liar?
No,
and that's proven out by his actions.
Absolutely not.
Okay, Raheem, is Jack Maxey and the rest of this MAGA movement, are they part of a cult of personality? I want to pivot right into this now, because this is a very insidious, the lies you can kind of attack head on, because they do this a lot. They've done it for Trump from the beginning. This cult is a whole new aspect. Is this a tell that they're losing, or is this so insidious it could be effective?
I don't think of it like that at all. I mean, I think, you know, the insult cult is used routinely. They used it, the right used it under Obama. It's been used to talk about people who...
I don't remember ever saying Obama was a cult.
Really? You don't remember...
I ran Breitbart.
You don't remember Obama Nation and the Cult of Personality, that book? It was a best-selling book during the Obama years. They've used it to talk about JFK.
I'm very proud of the fact I didn't read one of those Obama books. Not
no,
one.
You wrote all of them.
No, not one. I actually liked Obama. I thought he was too progressive a president. Although he was around for the greatest. This is what gets me about Obama. He's supposed to be the most progressive president we ever had. The greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind took place under his watch, and nobody talks about it.
To the bailout
of the Federal Reserve or the elites.
They talked about the Tea Party as a cult. We talked about the Occupy movement as a cult. It goes back and forth, right? And it's supposed to be one of the most.
So why are they using it now?
Because it's one of the most insulting.
Is that testing shows that if you say you're a cult, all of a sudden it's like radioactive?
What you're saying is that these people are mindless drones, right? Remember the big meme that took hold earlier? The NPC meme. Did you see this?
Orange Man Bad. Still the best and thing that, ever. But explain that to people. We ought to get that up on the site.
Well, I don't know if it even. I think the meme goes beyond what I can explain. It's been out there for so long now. It's the gray figure, which is supposed to be one of these non-player characters inside a video game, right? It's just the person in the background, an extra, if you will, but a non-thinking extra. And they just repeat certain lines, and the line coming from the left's NPC is Orange Man Bad. And they can't compute when you tell them, you know, Trump is actually, you know, help black people or Hispanics more.
Well,
if
they hear what Jack Maxey just said about the economy and about all that, they just go, "Hey, I hate this guy."
But cultism is always accused of by both sides, and so the reason that they're pulling this one out now is because they lost the war in terms of being called a cult earlier this year with the NPC meme. This is CNN and the Guardian's way of punching back against it, but they're doing it in a very analog fashion. The reason Orange Man Bad was so funny, it was. It was rhetorical, it was memey, it was catchy, it was viral. Putting up a television show on 11 a.m. on Thanksgiving called All the President's Lies, in my parlance, it's a little on the nose. It doesn't really cut to what people really see is going on out there.
You've been around, Jack, the MAGA movement for quite a while. Do you think that it holds water? And you think other middle-class Americans that are maybe not active supporters of President Trump but independents, do you think they'll buy into this cult aspect?
No, I think they see it for what it is, just a catch call to wind up the base of the left. But this is nothing true. I mean, you look at Fiona Hill called us Bolsheviks. Yes, that Fiona Hill.
Yeah, she got a job, though.
Yeah.
She called us Bolsheviks and still got a senior job. Let's go. Is Dan Rather trying to make himself relevant like he was in Watergate? Is he trying to make himself relevant here by stepping in here and calling us a cult?
Well, I think if he was, you gave him a little bit of a slap down on Fox earlier this week. I think it was one of those mic drop moments. It was with Trish Regan on Fox, where you really
Monday night, where you
really got into it about Dan Rather. Yeah, you know, probably trying to make himself.
Didn't I say he should apologize? I haven't heard his apology yet.
Yeah, and also I think the other thing, just while we're on the topic, to pull out of that interview was and people need to internalize this, is figuring out whether or not this anonymous person is actually a senior person. That interview, if people want to watch it, it's on YouTube, it's on the warroom.org website. Look, Dan Rather is one of the many thousands of talking heads as far as the left is concerned over this stuff. But guess what? These people who voted for Trump, predominantly voted for Trump, are, you know, slightly older voters or middle-aged to older voters, and they understand who these people are. They've seen them all their lives. They've watched them on television. They know they stand for the status quo. It does. Dan Rather coming out and saying this is not going to cut through with anyone.
Okay, on the Saturday show, which you're going to anchor, I'll be in by phone. You're actually going to deconstruct all the president's lies. And here's the reason we're doing this. Just like you did The Guardian, I think you did a great job yesterday. I hope people on their Thanksgiving dinners were armed by what Raheem and Greg Mons and Jack had teed up for you. But it's important to confront these shows. It's important to confront the evidence and take it apart and show that they're the ones that are over the top.
The biggest thing we did during the Brexit referendum was confronting the lies of the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC. It was our version
the
of Beeb. CNN. Yeah, and from
well, it's more all encompassing. It's like the cultural and news organization that envelops.
Yes, it would be like CNN also owning NPR and all this other stuff. But here's the thing. From 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, when you turn on the BBC Radio 4, right until 11:30 midnight that evening, the BBC programming was all dedicated to anti-Brexit stuff. And if they had been allowed to get away with it, if people hadn't been out there just pulling things, pulling clips, going through line by line, like we do at CNN, like we do at The Guardian, like we do at Dan Rather, then they would have got away with all of it. And it turned out they didn't.
Okay, tomorrow Raheem's going to go through all the president's lies, Jake Tapper's speech and special on CNN and deconstruct it. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return in just a moment on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice .news, Newsmax TV, fastest growing cable in the country. Also, warroom.org. We'll be back in a moment on our Black Friday special.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back on our Black Friday special, Area 51. No, that's not true. It's Episode 51 on the War Room Impeachment. You can get up on the podcast. Only got a couple minutes left in the show, and a very special show. If you're driving around today, going to the different sales on Black Friday, you're seeing the unlocking of the animal spirits in the American economy. The core to capitalism is unlocking the value and grit and determination and energy of every individual working together. And this is showing this economy's on fire. People have more discretionary income they've ever had. And you're going to see it, I think, in this strong consumer spending during the holiday season. That's only going to drive this economy even further. I want to go for some closing thoughts. You know, President Trump, as we said on Thanksgiving Day, thanks for the focus. He's now focusing. He stood his ground. He would not go along with the media. He would also not go along with the Republican establishment and say you're sorry, but it's not impeachable. He said, no. What I said was 100% perfect, because here's the reason. This is why I was voted into office by the American people, to stop American decline. Jack Maxey.
Hey, listen, Donald Trump said he was going to fight for the American people. He has fought. We are a nation of warriors. We like guy like that, and we're willing to follow him. This weekend we're going to be watching football, we're going to be watching the helmets bang together, and you know what, that's Donald Trump. That's not the Democratic Party.
What is the Patriots are at Houston this week, right? Down in Tropicana Field with Brady and the guys. Hopefully bang some helmets down there. Raheem,
was that basketball?
Oh god, I know if it's not soccer. Other
you're dab right, it's not
soccer.
Oh
my god, unbelievable. Talk to us about, he stood his ground and he turned the tide, did he not, Mr. Raheem Kassam?
So we knew that President Trump was never going to be a president like any other. And Bill Clinton went out a couple of weeks ago and he said, look, the president needs to be getting on with the business of government and showing the country that he is there getting on with the things he was elected to do. And it's funny, he hasn't just done that. He's also taken the impeachment thing head on. So he's done the Trump way of doing things mixed in with the Bill Clinton way of doing things. As Bill Clinton went through his impeachment process, he, you know, tried to persuade the voters that he was getting on with the business of government. Trump, the Energizer Bunny, is doing both of those things, and I think the polling is bearing out that it's working very well for him.
Do you think in the turn, real quickly, do you think by him standing and turning independents to neutral and maybe against this, as we'll see, because they're beavering away on this report now, Adam Schiff's guys on the majority report, Nunez on the minority report, and we hear there's some bombshells in the minority report. They're going to hand this to judiciary this week. It's going to be very contentious by Thursday or Friday. Do you think this is the reason Bloomberg came to the race, because he saw him turning around and the rest of the Democratic Party not hitting it?
I think Michael Bloomberg smelled weakness in Joe Biden. He smelled weakness in Joe Biden's mannerisms, and he smelled weakness in the way that Joe Biden is going to come out of this impeachment.
And he doesn't
process.
He doesn't think a small-time mayor, and a failed mayor, is going to win the presidency.
Isn't that a Parks and Recreation show?
Okay, this is a War Room Impeachment. We're going to be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on the Saturday show. Raheem Kassam and Jack Maxey, Greg Manns, and myself are going to deconstruct Jake Tapper's All the President's Lies tomorrow morning on our broadcast and our podcast. Thank you for joining us.